Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold here. We hope you had a good Christmas, and we've got a special edition of the podcast for you this week. So we're not focusing on the games around the NFL. We want to take you inside the NFL. And Jeff, looking at a couple of different areas, some of what the Jacksonville Jaguars are doing here in the UK, and you've got a good interview with an analytics guy with the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, Matt Shelton's a guy that I worked with in the past, a friend of mine, and I just called him up one day when you and I had talked about the analytics thing, and that's really what he does. He's the director of football research, for the Bears, and it's amazing, and I think the fans are really going to like to hear what really goes on and how the NFL now, all these teams, are using analytics to try and help them create a winning edge.
So was he a former player or coach? Or
no, Matt's history. Matt played at the University of Minnesota, and then he went on and coached at University of Wisconsin, then got a break, and he worked at the St. Louis Rams. He was an assistant coach for Mike Martz at St. Louis, and his association at St. Louis was on defense with Lovie Smith. He then went to Buffalo and worked for Dick Geron in Buffalo, and then went to Minnesota and worked in Minnesota with Coach Frazier. Mm-hmm. And I had him on our staff at Montreal. He helped me on defense, and just a really brilliant guy in a lot of ways. And it was really interesting how this analytics things work. He would tell me during the course of a drive, okay, for example, my third down calls have all been da 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 da. Here's what you've done. This is what they'll anticipate, bang. And so you could call something that they didn't anticipate. Or he would say that they're driving late for a field goal. We need to keep the kicker on the left hash because he's, less accurate by a certain percentage on the left hash. So you would call field blitzes to force him to get the ball into the left. Just really fascinating things that you would never anticipate coaches actually talk about, because you see them talking on the headset all the time. But this is the kind of stuff that goes on during the course of the game.
Yeah, it was certainly a fascinating conversation between Jeff and Matt. Let's play you that now, and then we'll have a chat about analytics on the back end. So here's Matt Shelton, the director of football research and analytics for the Chicago Bears.
We got a real special guest now, a friend of mine from the Chicago Bears, Matt Shelton, who I had an opportunity to coach with, and one of the really smart guys in the National Football League. Matty, can you give us just a feel, give our listeners a feel, what is your exact title with the Bears?
Well, good afternoon, guys. I'm the Director of Football Research and Analytics with the Chicago Bears. I started just about 6 months ago, when Coach Fox and Ryan Pace came to Chicago and started to kind of put their stamp on this franchise. And it's been exciting, and it's been actually exhilarating working back in the National Football League.
Now, again, you talk about working back in the National Football League. Matt, I know, for our listeners, you're a guy that's had some tremendous experiences, worked for Mike Martz in St. Louis, and went on and coached in Buffalo, coached in Minnesota. You've been around some great ones on defense, Lovie Smith and some of the better coaches in the National Football League. This analytics thing that's taken the NFL by storm, give us a feel, Matt, of exactly what that entails.
Absolutely, Jeff. The way that I see the analytics is really kind of two buckets. First, there's a real popular analytics conference that goes on at MIT. It's called the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference. And that thing has really taken off from probably 4 or 5 years ago. There was 500 or 600 attendees to 4,000 today. And when you go to that conference, you'll find a lot of a real, what I call hardcore mathematical or probabilistic type of a people, where they're trying to fish into huge data sets, and they're trying to gain advantage for these sports franchises, not only the NFL, but across all professional sport, across the globe, actually. And they're trying to find things that could be created advantage using huge data sets. The other way I see the analytics is actually taking some of that information and trying to boil it down, summarize it, make it useful to the decision makers, because that's really what the art of what we're doing is trying to create research, gain an edge through analytics, and provide, in my case, the general manager, the head football coach, something they can use to make a better decision.
All right, so let's talk about in practice, right? And I'm not talking about practice as in practice. I'm talking about putting the analytics into practice in a game, for example. When you're driving, it's late in the game, and you now talk about probabilities. When you're looking at third down calls, when you're looking at do we want the ball on the right hash or the left hash because our probability is better or our kicker's probability is better off the right hash or left hash, do those kind of conversations go on during the course of a game?
Well, they absolutely do. And at that point, Jeff, and, you know, we've worked together, they're actually more reminders, because at this level of football, or again, any sport, you have enough meeting time during the week that you're rolling through these scenarios through your regular course of your work week. So whether it's a head coach's preference, I'd like to kick the final field goal. We're in possession of the ball. I'd like to kick the final field goal with 6 seconds left or 7 seconds left. In the rare case that there would be an offensive foul, we could have a chance at a re-kick. Or I'd like to kick the final field goal with 2 seconds remaining because I want it to be the last play of the game. You know, another scenario that, again, they're layered. And Jeff, you understand this because we used to have these conversations. You come out in a drive. You're playing defense. The offense has a tackle for loss. Excellent. The down and distance is 2nd and 13. Well, they drop back to pass on 2nd and 13. They have a holding call. Okay. Well, what's better, Jeff, probabilistically? 2nd and 23, a replay of the down, or 3rd and 13? Well, those are probably very close as far as your percentage stop. But where it gets interesting is if you can push them back out of field goal range, that may be a consideration. And then it continues to get interesting in if they're kicking into or with the wind, or it's just started raining and it's forecast for more heavy rain, or the wind is swirling. Heck, one of the games we were at this year, we couldn't get a gauge on the wind. The only way we could tell is by the smoke from a pyrotechnics in pregame warm-up. So we're trying to collect information from all sources all the time, and really the key, as anything, is get a good night's sleep the night before so you have your antenna up and you can have these short conversations that hopefully you gain an edge.
Now, you know, I know you've worked closely with Adam Gase in the past, and again, one of the bright young coordinators in the National Football League. How much does he get involved with crunching the numbers when you start talking about opponents and tendencies and all of those things?
Well, that's the interesting part, is really people think, well, baseball's taken leadership in analytics because of the kind of the money ball craze. And I believe that to an extent of analytics involved with the personnel side of the business. But actually, football has been a leader in analytics for so many years because the game is studied and prepared for situationally, but it's played chronologically. And it's really interesting because you go out and play the game, all the situations that you prepared for either that week or in previous weeks are probably going to come up at one point or another, but you don't know when in the chronology of the game. So, Jeff, you know this. The first third down of the game could be 3rd and inches. Well, we practice 3rd and inches, but you don't know when that's going to come up. So an excellent coordinator like Adam, he studies all the situations and has memorized on game day. Not just sheets to remind him. They have memorized on game day what all the probabilistic tendencies are, not only for the defense that he's playing, but for himself. So there's this whole other genre of study called self-scouting, where you not only need to know what the probability of your opponent, what their actions might be, you have to know how you have been seen by them for the last 5 or 6 weeks of play. So it's a high-end chess match that's really very exhilarating.
Now, you know, Matt, you know, I'm going to take you back through your time with Mike Martz and Lovey and Dick Geron and all of the coaches, Leslie Frazier, all the guys you've been around. Where do you see from your standpoint, from your vantage point, where do you see the NFL trending? How has the game changed during that period of time?
Well, you're asking an interesting question. And the game, it's very vivid to me, has moved to being a short passing game. When I entered the National Football League just about 15 years ago, 2001, shotgun was only used 14% of the time. Now it's used in excess of 50% of the offensive snaps. And so what's interesting is if you study the game, again, I'm into the research aspect as well, and I really respect the work that all the coaches and all the personnel people have done in the league for all the years before just my small association. The league is very cyclical. But what's interesting right now is a lot of the concepts in the National Football League are being taken from American college football. And Jeff, you know, that's very rare. Usually as a college football coach, you're trying to obtain pro football video and trying to grab concepts and move them backwards into college. But right now, with the bubble screens, the screen game in general, there's an inordinate amount of passes per game thrown just 3 yards behind, 3 yards from the line of scrimmage or less. A lot of these passes are actually backwards passes. And so it's a short passing game. 70% of the throws are within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage or less in the National Football League. So you think of that and you say, well, people have to defend that. So now you're opening up that interesting skill set of what are people doing defensively, what skills do the players need to defend this predominantly short passing game. And that's some of the areas that I'm involved in with the Bears is I'm watching the league trends, as you've asked me about, but I'm also trying to reverse engineer those trends and say what skill sets would be necessary to acquire players to be successful.
You know what, Matt, it's interesting you say that because I know we had this conversation during our season, and you were talking about how 70% of those throws are 9 yards from the line of scrimmage or shorter. And so coaching the linebackers, one of the things that I did, frankly, was tailored my drills to that skill set, having the ability to drop and drive up on the ball as opposed to lateral drops and lateral drives, because that's what they were doing more in the game. And I think that's interesting how you have both the coaching background and the analytics background, so you can help coaches tailor what they do in practice to the skills that the athlete is actually going to do on game day.
Well, you're very smart to do that, Jeff. And again, a lot of this is not groundbreaking concepts. It's just, in the case of the Bears, having someone on the staff who has an antenna up for what these trends are. And the other part that works well for me is I've coached in the National Football League. I've coached in the NCAA major college as well as in the Canadian Football League. So I understand that maybe the Monday morning after a very, very tough road loss, maybe that's not the time to bring up a great analytical finding. So I also...
Pick your spots, you know, right? Pick your fights.
Exactly. You know, because so much, Jeff, you guys know, so many great ideas, not only in sport, but in any business, so many great ideas fall by the wayside just in bad timing or bad presentation. So just knowing the schedule and knowing the ebb and the flow of how the coaches work. And again, we use our offensive coordinator, same conversation with our defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator. These guys can take an enormous amount of information and sort and make it sticky for game day, but it has to be done in small bits and pieces throughout a work week on a 6-day turnaround for that to be effective on game day.
I got you. Matty, now I'm going to let you go after this one, but I got to hear how you feel. And again, we've got a huge contingent of Bears fans over here in the UK. The Bears were actually one of the first teams to come over here all the way back in the fridge days. And, you know, obviously it's been a year of trying to create a culture and develop a winning attitude in Chicago, but where do you see your team trending right now?
Absolutely trending upward, Jeff. Coach Fox and Ryan Pace have done a wonderful job in several areas. The first is attracting a quality staff, both in the player personnel end with Ryan and the coaching staff with Coach Fox. And the second is starting to select the players that are really Chicago Bears, and that's in the vision of Coach Fox as well as Ryan Pace, guys that are smart, hardworking, and humble, those three things. And then tough. Coach Fox is a very tough-minded individual, understands how to win in the National Football League, been a Super Bowl participant in three different occasions, twice as a head coach, very experienced, and things are moving in a positive trend. We are competitive when we're playing our games, and right now we just need to finish. And that's the message Coach is giving the organization.
Well, Matty, I appreciate you taking a minute out of your busy, busy week to spend some time with us here in the U.K. and the fans in the U.K. And all of us over here wish you and the Bears a success through the course of the season and on through the off season. I look forward to seeing you again, my friend.
Very good, guys. Anytime. Always like to try to forward and evangelize football, and I know how many great fans there are in the United Kingdom, and hopefully we're building more fans all the time.
All right, Matt. Thank you.
So, Jeff, I know sometimes the football community is a little bit divided on analytics, where we've had Neil Hornsby of Pro Football Focus on this podcast before, and you know sometimes people in the business question what his team do in terms of analysing games, but there's no getting away from it. Teams are using this more and more now, trying to find that edge, that minimal gain.
You know, one of the greatest coaches I was ever around was a guy named Frank Gans, and Frank was maybe the best special teams coach that ever walked. And, you know, he used to talk all the time to the players about we're searching for small wins, slight victories, you know. And that's really what analytics can bring to you. It's, you know, we're all products of what we have been through and what we understand. And we'll go back to certain things in pressure situations. What the analytics guys do is they sit all week and then they try and take all the emotion out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They just look at raw numbers, sheer trends, all those types of things. And so then additionally, and this is where Matt was so amazing with me, he would come to me and he'd say, Jeff, you're starting to get into a pattern on 2nd and 7 to 12, let's say, you're 95% blitz. You need to be, you know, three-man rush and play coverage. To keep the offense guessing. Well, that's what these guys do. And I will tell you, of a drive this year in a critical situation where the Bears needed to get to a spot on the field, and so that Robbie Gould would have a chance to kick a winning field goal. And there, during the play calling, Adam Gase and those guys kept in their minds that they needed to get to a specific distance and a specific hash, because the probabilities then were much higher that Gold would actually hit the field goal and win it.
What about in practice? Analytics apply to practice? This guy needs a rest.
In every area, because now as you watch, if you go and watch an NFL practice, and you've seen it, Neil, as you've traveled around the National Football League, the players all wear a little computer chip in their T-shirt underneath their pads, and that thing tracks. And this actually started, just so you have a history of analytics, it actually started in rugby in Australia, and it's now in rugby here, it's in soccer here. It's, you keep track of how much a player actually expends energy during practice, how much he runs, what are the most physically demanding aspects of practice, and so that you are constantly making sure that they're tapering and to be as healthy and rested as possible on game day. And then over the course of a season, you monitor this. So analytics is a huge part of football today.
Got to wonder where it's going to go next, Jeff. You've got analytics, you've got virtual reality now where the quarterbacks are wearing these eye masks and they can go home and they can see the play as it's been run in practice. I mean, it's
phenomenal. And I think that the Players Association actually has kind of, and this happened in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia has a band that they give their players that they can wear around their wrist that actually monitors their sleep habits. And so that their sleep profiles were all downloaded in the offices at with the Eagles. And the Players Association said, whoa.
Yeah.
You cannot. That's too much. That's now we're getting. Because what the Eagles were concerned about was the quality of a player's REM sleep, right? Mm. How much sleep he's getting. And the Players Association filed a grievance because they said, nope, you cannot get into a player's life to that level.
No. Imagine Kenny Stabler and Fred Biletnikoff wearing them.
They think it was broken.
Did you keep the receipt? I'm going to send this.
Hey.
This thing don't work. No, it's just that Kenny's thrown it to the bottom of a glass of bourbon.
Exactly.
It's sloshing around at the bottom. Oh, they don't make them like that anymore.
No, Jim. I'm afraid not.
All right, let's get on to our second interview then, and it's discussing the Jacksonville Jaguars. We've got big plans for the UK. We spoke to Hussein Naki, who's the Senior Vice President of International Development for the Jags. And you'll hear he's very excited about what they're doing in the UK, but also about the young talent on this team.
So, Hussein, thanks for joining us. Maybe let's start with looking at the fact that in the UK, in Great Britain, there are more people playing American football. So, and maybe importantly, the numbers at flag football level, young children, have really, really grown. I mean, does that sort of resonate with the Jacksonville Jaguars? Does that mean anything to you guys as a team?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me. It is an incredible opportunity, I think, both from a participation perspective, growing the game, developing knowledge of the game. I think it's a great way of kids getting healthy, and it's a great way from a branding perspective to introduce our brand, introduce the fact that we are really deeply committed to the community. And growing the game, it's a great entry point for us. So we've developed things like our JagTag program, where we'll be introducing it to as an after school program to two schools in January, and we launched it last year and got some really, really good response when we did it just in a park. We're really excited about that. The JagTag program, we have a playbook, we have. Just it's really a way of introducing the game, and you know you have this goofy looking ball, and what are you supposed to do with it, and how do you throw it, and what kind of plays can you do? What can you do with your friends in a park or in at the beach or whatever it is? Mm. And it's a great way of getting the game out there and getting our name out there.
And I guess something that. From your time with the Jacksonville Jaguars back in the States, this is something that you're used to doing, taking flag football programs, play 60 to, I mean, this is not a new thing, but I mean, it's a good thing here for the UK, but it's something that's ingrained in the NFL culture back in the States, isn't it?
That's right. We have tons of programs, both locally and regionally in Jacksonville, where we have, you know, teams of people who will go out and do these, whether it's with players, introducing the game, trying to get kids fit, or we have some grassroots teams that go out and try to get kids engaged with both the brand and the sport itself. And there's obviously the heads up football programs and things like that. As you graduate and get more more sort of advanced and kids get older and want to play more contact based football. Those are all opportunities for us, and yeah, you know, we have a fulsome program back in Jacksonville, and are looking to bring some of that knowledge and some of that experience over here.
It ticks some good boxes in terms of giving back to the community, as you say, getting young children healthy as well. But I've seen it firsthand; it can create fans as well. I mean, it can turn these young kids into fans of the NFL, of the Jacksonville Jaguars for life.
You know, some of everybody's earliest memories of playing sport, irrespective of the sport, is when they've had a way to engage with a brand. You know, one of the things that I've learned, particularly given the growth of the game here, is when you ask people about how they became a fan of any given team, it really is, you know, how they've been engaged, whether it's through a family member, through meeting a player, through going to a game, being given a T-shirt, whatever the case may be, it's just you never know what the engagement point is, and it is a really, I think, a very interesting and a ripe way of getting to get people engaged with the NFL, with the Shield, with the ball, with the sport, and then more selfishly, get people involved with the Jaguars.
Yeah,
and if we can develop new fans among the growth of new fans, if we can sort of say of the every 10 new fans of the NFL, we get some portion of those to be Jaguars fans, then I think we're on to something, and it can be a slow burn, but given how quickly the game is growing and the various opportunities people have to either watch the game, play the game, meet our players, I'm confident that that'll be a great opportunity in a very short order to develop Jaguars fans.
You mentioned meet players. Don't want to put you on the spot to spend your franchise's money, but is it when you do these flag programs or things that are here in the market, would that be important? Because I saw how the kids reacted to Sergio Brown when he was over last year as well. So to actually see and listen to and touch an NFL player, is that important? Is that part of the plan?
Oh, absolutely. We have a fairly consistent presence in the market. We bring players over here 2, 3, 4 times a year. Plus, obviously, we have our game here every season, and we tend to open up practices at the end of the practice for people to do meet and greets and engage with our players. It's obviously a very critical element. They have a very busy season back in Jacksonville, so it can be challenging. And certainly our game is a year-round one in terms of being able to have them stay fit, have them stay healthy, whether it's, strength and conditioning programs or whatever their off-season obligations are. Plus, they have their own lives, right?
It's a busy time. They don't actually get as much time off. People always say, oh, what a long off-season. But when you're taking off-season workouts and mini-camps and training camp, they don't actually, there's only a few small windows there, aren't there?
That's right. And it's even smaller when the GM is like, oh, my God, there's no way I can let him go for 4 days. But no, we have the good thing is that every single player who has been over here has loved it and raved about it and loves the fans, loves the passion. I don't mean this in a negative way, but they are so pleasantly surprised by how engaged people are over here. And there tends to be a bit of a sort of a gap when you're not over here every day in terms of what you think the market might look like. And when they come over here and they see just how passionate the fans are, irrespective of whether they're a Jaguars fan or a Packers fan or 49ers fan or whatever it is, they love the NFL here.
Yeah.
And our fans love the fact that they love the NFL. And so there's no shortage of people who are interested in coming. Mm. It's just sometimes an issue of practicality on some level.
What is the franchise's view now? You've been over for a few years, and you've seen the fan base. You got to enjoy that first win at Wembley Stadium this
year. That was great.
And Wembley was absolutely rocking. I was down on the sidelines doing the game for Sky Sports. And actually, I think I used that phrase just before kickoff. I looked around, and there were flags were flying, the music was blaring, and I said, it was. The place was absolutely rocking for the Jags, and you gave them plenty to cheer about. What a game it was. But, I mean, what's the thought from back in Florida about what's happening here in the UK, which, of course, the Jags are a big long-term part of. It's not just we're going to come for one and go. There's some roots being laid down in.
Yeah, no, it is a really critical element to our strategy on a long-term basis. It is a central part of our strategy on a long-term basis, the development of the game here, both in terms of the game as a general proposition and obviously the Jaguars brand. So I've moved over here in a capacity that is meant to be able to figure out what we can do to develop the game on a deeper basis. We are really intrigued by the opportunity. We have a particularly sort of special relationship with this market just because of the economics of our game. And, we know that every game here that we play makes us stronger back in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's sort of a perfect sort of symbiotic relationship that we view Jacksonville and London kind of hand in glove. Mm-hmm. And everything that we do, whether it's back in Jacksonville or here, is a view to how do we grow both markets. And our fans back in Jacksonville have been really understanding of that, really embracing of it. Yeah. We bring over several hundred people every year mm-hmm. to the game, and they love the fact that we're over here. And, you know, I think, given the engagement that we have had over here, back trying to get people involved with our brand, you know, we just broke 50,000 members mm-hmm. of our Union Jacks fan club, and that's in, what, 3.5 years?
Yeah.
You know, that is a real testament to our fans. It's a testament to the work that folks like you have been doing to grow the game. And, you know, I'm hoping to ride your coattails a little bit.
Well, you can ride Blake Bortles, Alan Robinson, Alan Hearns. I mean, all the marketing in the world could be great, but when you've got players like that are doing it week in and week out, that helps as well, doesn't it?
Those are some pretty big shoulders, and I'll gladly ride on them.
Absolutely. I mean, it has been an exciting season for the Jags. They're still in the playoffs.
Still race. In the hunt.
Yeah, I mean, but some young, exciting young talent there.
Yeah, you know, it is a real breath of fresh air, and it is really, really neat to see these guys come together. It's gratifying for the franchise, obviously. They've put in a ton of work. Gus and Dave have done a great job of building the roster. Mm. You know, they have they've really preached patience and preached staying the course, and I just couldn't be happier for them.
Yeah, they deserve it.
Through all of the ups and downs that they've had, and there have been plenty of them, as you know,
yeah.
That they have stayed the course, and it's really gratifying to know that somebody who has the courage of their convictions and has been the steady ship that the two of them have had at the helm, and frankly, you know, Shad and Mark as well,
yeah.
being able to keep the organization together, and
well, they've displayed patience, haven't they?
That's exactly right, in a sport, in an industry where it's really, really difficult to do that, to see the growth of some really cornerstone players, right?
Yeah.
If you think back to, you know, the heyday of the Cowboys, you think back to the heyday of the 49ers. You know, you had Emmitt, you had Irvin, you had Aikman, you had Novacek, right? You had those guys who were sort of the cornerstone.
Yep.
And then, you know, on the other side of the ball, you had some real, you know, you had some real actual rocks in Haley and the rest, and Dion, and sort of the backside of that defense. And
yeah.
We can get there. I know we can. And, you know, we clearly have a solid foundation, and it's only going to get better.
So Mr. Khan has displayed patience in the U.S. You mentioned just a moment ago about it can be a slow burner in terms of growing, taking that percentage of fans. So as you look to what you're doing in the UK now, is it important that whatever you do has longevity? Is that part of your plan?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that, you know, look, there has to be some initial engagement.
Sure.
And there has to be sort of an initial kind of introduction to the brand and an introduction to engaging and hook to get behind
and
the
catch
NFL.
Your attention.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. But I think that in and of itself, that doesn't have the staying power that you know, some other engagement. You know, you mentioned flag football. When you can touch and feel and understand the strategy of the game, because it's not, you know, in fairness, it's not necessarily an intuitive game, right? When you look at European football,
right,
there's an intuition behind you. You have a goal, you have a ball, and it goes in there, and that is how the game is played effectively. It's less kind of intuitive,
yep,
American football, and it's really unlike any other sport that is commonly played here. There's a little bit of like rugby, I suppose, but generally speaking, not.
Sure.
It's foreign. And so I think that we have to figure out platforms and engagement opportunities that teach people the game, that teach people the uniqueness of the game, that people, that get people behind the mask and underneath the helmet.
Yep.
In a way that, like I said, it's just sort of different than what other people are used, or what most sports fans are used to here. So I think if we can come up with programs, we can come up with opportunities where people can touch and feel and understand the strategy behind the game, then there might be some staying power. But that has to be coupled with, you know, the razzmatazz and the excitement that is an NFL game.
Yeah.
That is absolutely unique to this culture. I spent a lot of time at European football games, and That's just a very different value proposition than the NFL offers. Not good or bad, it's just different. And I think there's something for everyone in an NFL game. And when I say everyone, I mean men, women, children, the whole family. It's a family day out. And in a really different environment. And I think that we need to – that has the staying power. If we can convince people that there's a really different value proposition than anything else that they have from a sporting perspective, if we can convince people that it is a – it is a real thinking game. There is a real interesting strategy behind the starting and stopping and non-running clock and all this kind of stuff. Then I think we're onto something pretty interesting.
And is that important then that you get out and sort of? And I know in Jacksonville you had those kind of roadshow type things, didn't you? And you go out and you can cheerleaders perform and your alumni. I mean, what are the plans for the UK? A broad brush. I know you don't give all your detailed plans.
Yeah,
of course,
no. But. So we have a pretty fulsome community outreach program where we go to 15, 20 different sites, whether it's music festivals or rugby tournaments or sort of general outing opportunities where it's getting
brand into the conference.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Getting people to play. Whether it's Madden or giving out footballs or engaging with a throwing game or whatever it is, it's just sort of whet people's appetite. And it is like I said, it's a foreign, in many respects, a foreign concept to a lot of people. So if we can sort of break down those barriers, we can do that. I have designs on sort of a Three Nations 7-on-7 tournament involving Wales, Scotland, and England.
Yeah.
Maybe some academy ideas where we can get some of the top university players coming over here and having some who are here and getting them sort of skill trained and that kind of thing. So I think that if we can hit the JAG tag at the elementary school level, flag football at more of a recreational level, full contact football at the university level, and get people engaged at each of those steps, and then along the way get people introduced to the game, whether it's the community programs or at our game or the Trafalgar Square, Regent Street, those kind of activities, then we sort of cast as wide a net as possible and sort of see where it goes. But the active engagement in terms of being able to touch and feel our brand, that's something that is really critical. And it's an expensive market to have your dollars or your pounds spread properly, but that's what keeps me up at night.
It's a good problem to have.
It is a very good problem to have. You're
so
right,
we know
that.
We know that the new extension deal has been signed with Wembley Stadium. Seems like the Jags don't want to go anywhere for a long time. Seems like you're going to be playing here in London for the foreseeable future. That's a good thing for us because Bortles, Robinson, they're all already in their second year. We can all grow old together nicely. But it doesn't seem like the team's planning to turn its back on the UK at all. It seems like just going to go forward in the other direction.
I sure hope not. That means I'm out of a job. No, this is very much a foundational element for us, I think. You never know what the future brings, but certainly the short to intermediate term future, London is very much part of part of the NFL's the Jaguars' sort of stability plan in Jacksonville, because, like I said, our financial arrangement with the game is fundamentally different than any of the other teams that come here. And so because we make much more on that sort of a similarly situated game in London than we do back in Jacksonville, it sort of behooves us to continue this. And it has paid dividends in spades. We know that about 15% of our local revenue comes from the London market.
And you can upgrade overall. The stadium. You're looking at building an indoor practice bubble. I mean, are these things connected?
100%, absolutely. Right. So you can't invest without the proper returns. Mm. Right. And when you have opportunities like London stabilizing your franchise as a general matter, then you can sort of look to how you're going to grow. Once you have a solid foundation, you can grow from there. It's not until you develop that foundation that growth is possible. And so, I think that we have through the leadership of Shad and Mark, have done some pretty unbelievable things in about 3 years, right?
Yeah.
I mean, bear in mind, he's only owned the place 4 years, I guess. And, you know, it's a pretty short amount of time. He and Mark have shown some really remarkable stewardship of the franchise, and it is because we have been able to lay the base. It's because of opportunities like London and the great fan support that we've had here that allows us to make investments here, make investments back in Jacksonville. For those of you who have not heard, we've announced a partnership with the city of Jacksonville to build an indoor practice facility, an amphitheater, a sort of entertainment complex behind that, all within the footprint of the sports complex back in Jacksonville. And we invite all of our listeners to go check it out, because we really pride ourselves on a great game day experience. You know, we have the world's largest video boards. We have two swimming pools in the stadium. Yeah. And you know, our fans have spoken, and we were rated the best game day experience in the NFL. Sort of across the board, and we really are very proud of the rankings that we were able to develop in, like I said, a relatively short amount of time. But it's a testament to our fans. It's a testament to Mark and Shad and their leadership.
It's good stuff going on in Jacksonville. Hussein, we're very glad to have the Jags and yourself here in London. Thank you for joining us.
It's really great to be here. Thank you.
So, Jeff, we know the Jags are trying to lay down markers here in the UK, which is great stuff. But you could just hear Hussein talk. They've got young players that they can really market and build over for the next decade now.
Yeah, you know, and you look at this, and I'm pulling for them, and I'm unabashedly pulling for them. And here's why. Because it appears to me that from Mr. Khan all the way down through that organization, all the way to the people that work in the building there, that they have a plan, they have a program that they're going to try and implement, they have a belief in the direction that they're going, they're consistent, and they follow through with that belief. Because the toughest thing in pro sports is you start to become a little bit like a rudderless ship. Whatever way the wind blows, that's the direction you go. And, you know, we're in this age now of, you know, over information, and the media is everywhere, and public opinion is all over them. And, you know, when you look at what they've done, holding on to a coaching staff that really, there weren't very many organizations in the league, frankly, that would put up with the kind of years that they put up with, because they believed in where they're going. They drafted because they let older players go, Jones, Drew, and some of those guys go, because they believed they were moving in the right direction. They had to go another way, and they were tough enough mentally, tough enough as an organization to stick to it, and that's why I'm rooting for them.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. So that wraps up this edition of the Inside the Huddle podcast, and it's the last one of the year. 2016 is on the horizon. I'm happy because I like even numbers. I don't like odd numbers. I'm only happy every other year.
Yeah, you grumpy old man.
It's been a bad year because it's been an odd number.
Well, get ready to get happy because it's 2016.
Yeah, look at what we got in 2016. We're going to have the playoffs coming up, which is going to be fascinating. We're going to take our podcast on tour. We're going to be together at the 50th Super Bowl, Jeff, and we're going to be broadcasting this podcast from Radio Row, video of this podcast all through the week. You know, we're going to have the chance to have three more games in London in 2016. You can see why I'd be happy about this year coming up.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's a good opportunity for us to say thank you, and all the fans to say thank you. You know, first of all, to you, all the people that have tuned into this podcast, made it the number one most listened to NFL podcast outside the United States. And two, frankly, to Alistair Kirkwood and all the people at the NFL UK office who listened to the people when they said they wanted one every week. They wanted to take it on the road. They wanted us from Radio Row.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the next step, Neil, is really going to be dependent on what the fans want. Do you want us to video stream this thing? Do you want a second one? I mean, this can go anywhere we want it to go, because we've got somebody like Alistair in the NFL UK office that listens to the fans.
And it's growing. And I have a feeling we're going to do four nights on the road during the playoffs. And four nights. And I have a feeling I'd like to think we'll do a few more after that as well, Jeff. But again, it's all down to the fans. If the fans come out and support these things and, you know, ask for more, then I think the NFL UK will listen.
Yeah, and you know what's been amazing, Neil, about this, as we've kind of thrown it out there just to test the market a little bit, the response has been absolutely phenomenal. So, you know, we're never going to get in four trips to everywhere that we should go or could go or want to go. But we'll get to four opportunities for the fans to speak back, to give feedback back to the NFL. And, you know, if it's positive enough, then we'll expand upon it.
And we'll put on quite a show. We'll be like those two in the Muppets. Remember those grumpy old men who used to sit up in the...
Hey, you're the one that said you're not happy. I'm happy.
I'll be happy. It'll be 2016 by then, Jeff. Just we're going to have to not do anything in 2017.
Nah, you know what? And let's talk about that on-the-road thing. I think it's going to be... we can really expand the mailbag situation where everybody...
some X's and O's.
We'll get into some X's and O's. We'll actually, you know, try and work with some young players and try and improve the game. Because it's all about... the reason for the whole deal is to bring the NFL to your town, but also help the game grow.
Absolutely. So good times ahead in 2016. We thank you for listening. All year you've made our Christmas, our New Year. We couldn't do this without all of your support. So Happy New Year to all of you. Say goodbye, Coach.
Mahalo, which is thank you, and aloha.